went from 10 employees to 27. We 3x'd our revenue. We 7x'd our profits. And I was able to take myself out of the day-to-day of my business.
Hey, you're going to love this interview with Lynn Askin. He's been in the digital marketing space for years, and for many years was struggling with the things that trouble so many small business owners: overwork, lack of profits, lots of stress. Recently, he has cracked the code to making his business much larger, more profitable, and being able to delegate and trust his team to a greater degree than ever before. We broke it down in this interview, and I think you're gonna take a lot away from it. Here is my interview with Lynn Askin.
When did you start providing digital marketing services to a client, a customer, in some way, shape, or form?
At some point, I started building computers, I think back in the early 90s, and I built and sold probably 200 computers over a year and a half, too, and I ended up doing a lot of tech support, you know, which was not a lot of fun back then. A lot of people didn't have any computer experience at all. At some point, I had a buddy who he actually sold blank CDs online. He's like, Lynn, you've got to sell something that's consumable. And so we actually built an online auction, and we built a e-commerce store that sold printer cartridges and supplies back in 96 and 97. And then I think at some point your bookkeeper says, hey, I've got another client who needs a website. Can you help? And that's kind of how it started. And so I think we built a website for a nutrition company out in Las Vegas at the time. And then, just sort of the e-commerce store took off. And then at some point, I think I was sitting in my office in Crowley, Louisiana. My family and I had moved there. And one of the guys from the Chamber of Commerce came in and brought a basket, like, welcome to Crowley. What do you do here? And I kind of told him, and he's like, oh my gosh, I need your help. And so he started describing his, very, very complex website project that they had just paid, $30,000 for the website, another $15,000 for some back-end code. They were in like a $8,000 web hosting plan. Wow. This is 16, 17 years ago. And
it's real money. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was kind of a mess and none of it really worked. And so we came in and they asked us for help. And it took some soul searching to see if I really wanted to start taking on clients, but we went and helped them, it felt really good. And then you just sort of realize that everybody on your street, or everybody in your town, or everybody in your state needs somebody like you to kind of help them navigate through some of these difficult online challenges. And so we started, we did that, had a successful project, and started getting referrals, and it just grew from there.
And was there a point? So it sounds maybe that I'm not going to say you're drag kicking and screaming, but you were in some way pulled to providing this service. Was there a point at which it flipped from, hey, I'm being pulled in this direction, to like, all right, I'm going to push the chips in and like go for this thing and really try to make something out of it?
Yeah, I think that probably happened several times in your career, in my career, I guess. At that point, I guess I felt like pulled. I think, I don't know, I've always had a bit of a heart of service, and they needed help, and they were struggling, and they in some ways opened up their checkbook and said, can you please help us? And, it was compelling enough that, my e-commerce store, I was basically getting orders. So I would click a button to import the orders into our software. I would click another button to process the credit cards. I would click another button to send the dropship orders. And then I would just go back to marketing. And that's about how long it took me to process orders. And so I was sitting in my cube in a town that I didn't really know a lot of people. And I was kind of, isolated in a lot of ways, and helping other people in the community just really gave me a bit of connection that I guess I needed. And it got me out of my cube. And I think that just became what I wanted to do. And as I started to help more people, I think I realized how much people really needed someone like me to help them along the way. And then I think I probably spoke to a local chamber of commerce, and then the Louisiana Small Business Economic Development Center, and then another one and another one and another one. And it just sort of grew from there, and it became our passion. In a lot of ways, we started with just SEO, and I think we had some crazy name called Louisiana SEO Expert or something like that. And that wasn't a sustainable thing, as SEO just didn't really encapsulate what we really did. And so started looking for something a little more technically savvy, and we ended up on Rackstar Digital Marketing. And at that point, I think we just came a full service digital marketing agency.
And so has that really kind of been the, would you call that the maybe two chapters where it was an SEO focused shop and then a kind of all encompassing digital marketing shop? Or are there any other chapters of the business story that, you know, are differentiated from those two?
Yeah, I think that pretty much describes, you know, the digital marketing career. I think at some point along the way, you know, you and I obviously are a member of a coaching group together, and I became a coach in that group. And that sort of was the next evolution of what my business became. Kind of moved into a lot of coaching, and I coach and help a lot of other younger agency owners kind of navigate their agencies and growing that sort of thing now.
Got it. And so one of the things that's interesting to me, and my only experience really is in sport, where at some point I became good enough at Ultimate Frisbee that like I was then invited to coach, or, you know, when I was a senior in college, I was, you know, coaching the freshmen effectively who were just trying to figure things out. And the benefit of that is that when you're coaching someone, it's almost like it you know, further deepens the grooves in your own brain of like the principles. It's like, hey, you know, young man or lady, like you really need to do this. And then you like go back and look at the mirror and you're like, I need to do that too. And it you know, instigates the change that's needed at your level. But and this is always kind of a risk, particularly in the business, like guru, you know, whatever it is, peak or mania that we seem to be in right now, where like anyone is like going to tell you how to do anything. There's a little bit of like, I always feel like I need to have walked the walk before I'm ready to help someone. So in my case, I'm nowhere close to being ready to be a coach within Seven Figure Agency and these other kind of like coaching programs. But there's, you know, a young man in town who's, you know, maybe in his second year of having an agency, and I can see him making some of the old mistakes that I used to make. And I'm happy to like, you know, lend a helping hand there. So bring it back to your story, like, the impact of coaching and the personal like mental step into playing that role where you knew I can help people, I can have an impact, I have, you know, these stories, battle scars that will make a difference.
I think that started really early. I don't know that happened just a couple of years ago. I think that happened when I started doing presentations for the local chamber. I think it started when I started doing presentations for the local Louisiana Small Business Economic Development Center. When you stand up in front of a room of people, you need to understand, you can't just go up there and regurgitate information. You have to understand it. You have to have done it, because you are going to get questions that you don't know how to handle necessarily. And that's where your experience comes in, when you start having to back up your words. And so there's a lot of fake it till you make it, I guess, in our industry, in our world. And you know, I don't always believe everything I see online. Clearly, that's a bad business idea. But I think that coaching and teaching is an incredible way to learn a skill. I think it, like you said, I think it pre-wires your brain and just makes connections sometimes that maybe you missed the first time around. And so when you're actually having to sit down and plan it out, and it's almost like building an SOP again, you know, it's just one really, really good way to solidify those ideas in your mind. So if you do have an opportunity to mentor or to coach or to help or to teach, 100%, I think you should. I think that if nothing else, it makes you a better operator yourself.
Absolutely. And from an operational standpoint, can you just give people a little bit of a picture of like where your business stands now and what you've accomplished? I know that, you know, bragging doesn't come naturally, but there's a degree to which, you know, you've built a very admirable business that a lot of people would be, you know, thrilled to get to operate.
Yeah. I don't know where to start with that story. You know, like anybody else, I've had ups and downs. You know, it hasn't always been easy. I think, some people look at you after a 25-year career here and go, wow, he's an overnight success, you know? And I think that's not how it works. I think it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of challenges. I think just being good at something, just being good at either building websites or SEO or any of that, doesn't qualify you to run a business. You know, I don't know. You just run into, there's so many other things that you have to know about your business around accounting and taxes and sales and marketing and HR and IT and insurance and things like that, that a lot of us just don't know as sort of a visionary in our company. And so, you know, from a success standpoint, my wife and I just bought our dream home. I've reached a certain level of financial success that I think that a lot of people would want to trade with me. And, but to me, when I think about success, I think about that I've never missed one of my son's karate classes or spelling bees or piano recitals or soccer matches or baseball games or award ceremonies or graduations. I've been at every single one. To me, you know, one of the things that we talk about, and we set these financial goals and we're like, oh, we got to get to $1 million or got to get 2 million or whatever. I think what all of us really want is freedom. And I just sort of built that in along the way. I think I gave myself the freedom to be there for my son every step of the way, to watch him graduate college at 20, to see him graduate with honors, to see him win the district math Olympics comp test. And as my son looked out into a giant sea of moms, I was there every single time. So my definition of success is different than yours, and it's different than every one of your listeners. But to me, you know, if my adult child wants to hang out with me, I've lived a very successful life.
Well, so what about, you know, freedom is like one of the eternal human aspirations in all forms, in all instances, is what people want. And so can you, you know, articulate some of the ways in which, you know, outside of making the decision that you were going to be there, the practical steps that you took to have that freedom, to enable yourself to be that kind of dad, to support that framework? Because, you know, I hear these two things, a financial outcome that most people would want, and, you know, what sounds like maximum presence with your child, are like, you know, right up there on the Mount Rushmore of things that people, majority of people will aspire to.
Well, I don't know that those two things came along simultaneously either. You know, I think that the business may have, you know, air quotes, suffered, you know, during those times where I would step away and go to his events. I think my wife and I had some tough lean years. You know, I think maybe we don't, you know, don't have as much retirement away as some people may. But we've built something else that's just as valuable, and it's an amazing relationship with ourselves and with our family. And so as my son got older, as he needed me less, honestly, this may be a great time to kind of talk through the biggest change of my life. I think happened to me in October of 2020. I collapsed in my yard and suffered a massive pulmonary embolism. And as I laid there sort of fighting for my life, assuming I was dead, all I could think about was what kind of mess did I leave my wife and son? You know, I had built a fairly decent business. We had a handful, you know, 10, 12 employees. We're probably doing $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a month in recurring revenue up and down, you know, but it was good money and we were doing well. And, but as I laid there, I thought, man, what kind of mess did I leave them? My wife's going to have to go to the office. She's going to have to fire all of our team. She's going to have to lose all of our employees or all of our clients. And she was going to have to lock the door behind me. And, you know, that would have been my legacy, Aaron. And I of course had a life insurance policy that I protected them with, but the pain of having to deal with all of that and have everything that I'd worked for just vanish in an instant was probably more than I could handle. And so I spent the next two and a half years fixing that, building systems and processes and really understanding what I needed, what freedom meant in my business. You know, freedom before meant just taking the time away, whatever it cost me. You know, it was just something that I had to do. Now, freedom for me means being able to step away without losing a beat, without losing clients, without the work, you know, the work is actually still getting done. It's to be able to go to Miami for a week and go to a conference and sharpen the saw and have things run smoothly without me. And so the last couple of years that I've spent in systems and processes and optimizations in my business have really been the transformation that allowed me the freedom that I'm talking about now.
And like practically or pragmatically, you know, what were two of the things that you did after that you weren't doing before that you know, had you been putting it off? Had you not focused on it? Like, how would you even articulate that? Because it can kind of almost feel like a cloud, right? When you're in any sort of entrepreneurial venture where you've got these, you know, plates spinning, and it probably caused the stress that, you know, contributed to the pulmonary right. embolism. Like, it's very hard to find clarity as to what the right lever is to pull.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a near-death experience gives you a lot of clarity. And so I think that prior to that, I just thought, oh, you know, I may never be able to retire. I guess I'll work until I die. I just didn't realize it could happen at 50. You know, I didn't realize it could happen so quickly. And so I had to focus. I had to fix. These are the same issues that everybody has in their business. You know, a lack of clear vision about from the visionary or the CEO. I had some team members that sort of had one foot in the door and one foot out. They weren't really clear on our vision. They weren't really clear on the roles. We didn't really have an accountability chart. We sort of had one, but it wasn't clear enough. We served everyone. We almost never said no to a project because we needed the money, right? And I think what we really did was sat down first and talked about our core values, about who we are as a team and what kind of people we want to work with. We figured out who our core target market was. And a lot of this, and you know, it'll sound familiar to some people because we found the EOS or Entrepreneurial Operating System. You know, I've read all kinds of books. I think I read E-Myth Revisited back when I was in Vegas, which was still in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002. And that book really struck me as something that, man, Lynn, you need to do this. This sounds like what you need to do. You need to build your company as though you're building 1,000 of them, sort of like a franchise model where you had everything documented, but, you know, just didn't get it done. And so, you know, I've looked at tons of books over the years. I think Clockwork was one. The Rockefeller Habits was one. Getting Things Done. There's so many of those kind of business systems and processes books that were out there that I just thought one day I would get to. And finally, it just became so real to me when I nearly died and left my wife and son a mess that I said, now we have to take this seriously. We have to build something that's sustainable. And so one of my first thoughts when that happened is I need to sell this. And what I realized was that it wasn't really sellable with the CEO so involved in the day-to-day. So read a couple books, listened to a bunch of podcasts, and a couple of things that I realized that I needed were, one, I needed to take the CEO out of the day-to-day operations of the business. So that means how can I take everything that I'm doing on a regular basis and delegate that to someone else? What do I have to put in place where I'm not so involved in the day-to-day? Two, we had to build more profit into our systems, you know, maybe raise some prices, maybe lose some lower end clients, maybe get do a little bit better job of massaging our packages and delivering more value. Three, we had to have better people. You know, we had some people that weren't the right people in the right seats in our company, and some people had to go, and we brought in some other really, really talented people. And so those were the kind of things that I started with. And then of course, processes, you know, we got into ClickUp and got all of our systems and processes documented into ClickUp. And by all, I mean, most of the core processes. You know, if you spend all of your time trying to get every SOP documented to 100%, you're going to end up with like a 700 page SOP manual that nobody reads. And so you have to sit down and go, okay, which are what's the 80-20 here, or the 20-80 in this case? What are the 20 core processes that handle 80% of our work? And so those are the things that I worked on specifically really hard over the last couple of years that have allowed me to become the visionary of the company and take myself out of that day to day.
And what's also interesting, so that's a seismic change at a systems level, at a company culture level, at a leadership level. But it's interesting to me, I'm sure that there was also changes here too, but you know, one of the things I always think about is Jeff Bezos and how he says, you know, there's things that are just never going to change. The customer is always going to want more. Like there's these principles that like will always have guide us towards a better deliverable for the customers of Amazon. And it's so interesting to me that, you know, you were starting building websites, you're starting SEO, then you evolved into like this, you know, well-rounded digital marketing offering. And that's still satisfying, retaining, delivering value to your clients more than a decade later. Like, can you just like, you massage these packages, but at its core, it was still the same drivers of value. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think it is. I think there are, you know, we hear a lot about how much Google changes, you know, ooh, you got to be on top of these Google, and you hear people talking about all these things. The truth is it doesn't change that much. Google's always wanted to deliver great value to their end users. They want to deliver the best search result, the most valuable, helpful content possible. And so that's, if you focus on that, you focus on delivering great value to your clients, and that can change. So, you know, when I talk about the packages, little pieces of that have changed. There's probably things that we used to do that we don't do anymore. You know, it's at some point you sort of have to come up with. And I guess I've always said, if you want to do well in business, find a group of people you like to work with, figure out what their biggest problem is, and solve that. Right? Maybe that problem is they need more leads, right? Maybe that's it. But maybe it isn't. Maybe they've got enough leads, they're not closing their leads well. And so then you have to sort of massage your package a little bit to help them with follow-up. Maybe they have enough leads and maybe they're closing them well. Maybe they don't have enough team members and maybe they don't have enough recruiting happening in their company. So maybe it's possible that you help with some recruiting things. So there's definitely ways to provide value. And add that into your product that continually improves the delivery that you're giving to your client.
And then in terms of making that rate of improvement something that's not owned by you, where it's not you who's the one making it better and making it of the highest caliber, like what have you learned about driving that? Because you're over 20 people now on your team, right?
Yeah, we have, I think we're close to 27 at this. I think we're just a little short of 27 now. I think we downsized a little bit in one spot. I think we're down from that just a little bit. I don't know. I hate to just keep talking about EOS a little bit, but the EOS has really been the foundation or the operating system that allowed all of this sort of growth and change over the last 2 or 3 years. You know, we talked a little bit about almost like a leopard can't change its spots. And in a lot of ways that's true. And a lot of ways that's true for me. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And so I actually have to hire and work around my limitations in ways of hiring the right people. You know, I might be great at visionary thing, but maybe there's something that I'm not great at getting done. And so I have to be able to hire the right people to do that. I think one of my favorite quotes from Steve Jobs is, I don't hire smart people so I can tell them what to do. I hire smart people so they can tell me what to do. And so when you put the right people in the right seats and you empower them to speak up, to not be afraid, to tell you when there's problems in the company, and then you have a weekly meeting to actually solve those issues. We have an issues list of the problems or the issues that happen in our company on a regular basis. We come together on that issues list and we work on that issues list every single week. And I think that's what happens in a lot of businesses. You get so in the weeds of putting out fires for your clients that you never get to work on the business. You're always working in it. So you have to take some time, step out of your business just a little bit from a little higher, you know, maybe 30,000 foot view and say, okay, what do we have to do to work on this business this week? And you got to spend time doing that.
And it also is a matter of focus, like bringing it back to the, you know, the clouds and the lack of clarity. The clarity that's provided, hopefully, you know, for listeners out here, not necessarily by a near-death experience, but by listening to Lynn talk a little bit about his, is, you know, the prioritization. And I it's certainly not the same, but you know, my wife and I had our first kid here a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. and it was a similar, clarifier, focuser, prioritization experience where, yes, I aspire to be a similar type of dad that's there for everything. And, you know, some of the just, either wastes of time or superfluous, or, you know, on the 80-20 principle, the opposite, like the 20% that really wasn't doing anything at all needs to be cut out in some way, shape, or form. Maybe I got that math wrong, but some of the 80% that wasn't doing, you know, high leverage stuff needs to be cut out. And it's that same opportunity for a phase change, for a shift change in how you go about operating. So can you, you know, when you're coaching people, because you're a coach now, how do you help them get focused on the thing or the very few things that make all the difference?
I think it's really good to look at, you know, to first examine where you're at. You know, where have you been? Where are you now? But there's this piece, this vision piece, this where are you going and where do you want to be, that helps paint the picture that allows you to work backwards. So whether it's EOS or one of the other things, one of the first things that you do is you clarify your vision. What does 10 years from now look like? And whether it's 10 years or 5 years or 3 years, you still have to have this forward-looking target that you're aiming at. You know, if you're just being reactive every day and you're not looking beyond your next step, I think it's really difficult to always know where you're headed. And so you got to start with some sort of plan. So building out your vision, getting really, really good at determining where you're going. And when you do that, when you're really clear on your vision, now you can get your team to be clear on the vision. I think one of the challenges a lot of us face is, you know, our team doesn't know necessarily where we're headed. They're just doing the work, right? I think it's really important for your team to not only know where they're at today, but where they could be tomorrow. So getting everyone on the same page with your vision is number one. And then coming up with a plan, you know, working backwards, if you start with a 10-year goal or 10-year vision, coming backwards to like a 3-year target, like what's your 3-year look like? Then working backwards to a year, where should we be a year from now to make sure we're on target to hit our 3 and 10-year goals? And then breaking that down even quarterly and just going down to 1 year and say, okay, where do we need to be a year from now? And then quarterly, what are the biggest rocks, I guess, for lack of a better term, should we be working on this quarter to move us closer to our 1 year plan?
And that's what you do as a EOS implementer, in addition to being a leader of a digital marketing firm.
Yeah, that's definitely a piece of it. You know, EOS obviously is a big part of my life. It changed my life. You know, when I had the pulmonary embolism and I found EOS, we went from 10 employees to 27. We 3x'd our revenue. We 7x'd our profits, and I was able to take myself out of the day to day in my business. And that comes from the philosophy that EOS really helps you and your leadership team get better at three things. And that's vision, like I said, getting everyone on the same page about where you're going and how you plan to get there. Traction, which is instilling this sort of discipline and focus and accountability in the company, so that no matter where you look in the company, from top to bottom, whether it's the visionary or all the way down to the guy who does the work, making sure that you're seeing your vision executed on a regular basis. And the other piece of traction that I think is really, or the other piece of EOS that I think is really important that we don't talk about a lot enough, probably is making your leadership team and your team this healthy, cohesive, functional, open, honest team. Because, you know, let's be honest, most of the time teams are not that. And so those are the three things that EOS really focuses on, you know, helping you get your vision, your traction, and team health in order.
How have you driven that last one, the cohesive, healthy culture? Because I think it's almost in certain ways like a meme, because you're going to see like every leader talk, oh, you know, like our culture is everything. And then the people behind, like, you know, actually doing the work are like, what is this guy or gal talking about? And then we've all heard the like horror stories of the stereotypical bad. But what's way more interesting to me is like, you know, almost like if you think about the two middle quartiles, like going from like 25, you know, being at the 25 percentile to the 75 percentile is an enormous change. Like from the bell curve standpoint, you are getting to a completely different place as a company and is way more like practically accomplishable than maybe like going out and being whatever the 100th decile is. I don't know exactly what that would be.
I mean, you can't just print a poster with your core values and stick it on the wall. You know, that's the kind of culture that you see in memes and things like that, and talk about the culture of the company. People don't learn from posters. Your core values have to be who you are. And a little bit of a side note, when we tried to sort of self-implement EOS, you know, I'd read the book and, you know, it's hard to get the team to read the book. So I said, okay, here are our core values, and I created them, right? And then I'm like, here are our core values. And they're like, well, maybe that's yours, but is that ours as a team? That didn't become real until we threw those out and we sat down as a team and we wrote our core values together. So we did a little core value exercise where we each kind of wrote out, you know, here are two or three people we admire. Here are two or three people on our team that if we had 100 of them, we could take over the world. And we wrote out, what are their qualities? What are the qualities that we admire in those people? And we just started to say, that's what we like. That's who we are. That's what we want to be. Those are the kind of people we want to work with. And when my team built those, and then my team built the 10-year vision, and then my team built the 3-year plan, and then my team built our 1-year goals, it just became part of the culture. And not only that, we live our culture on a day-to-day basis. So in our level 10 meetings, we praise each other based on people who live our core values. That's how we reward. It's how we hire. It's how we fire. It's how we do our evaluations. You know, we have this thing called the people analyzer. Is this person living our core values most of the time? And so you can't learn core values from a poster. It has to be real, and it has to start with me. So it can't just be something the team wants. You have to believe in it. And I think maybe a good example of this, and I don't say this to pat myself on the back, but there's a guy in the group that we're in, and he presented the fact that they do sabbaticals in their company. And so they work in these 8-week sprints. And so first 6 weeks, everybody's on staff. Week 7, half of his team's off for a full week paid vacation. Week 8, the other half of the team's off. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh my gosh, what an amazing thing that I would love to be able to offer to my team. When I brought it to my team, they said, there's no way we can do that. And I said, no, wait. What I don't want to hear that we can't do it. What I asked is, how could we do this? How could we make this happen for you guys? What would we have to put in place? So we sat down and it became part of our level 10 to go, okay, here's the list of all our employees. Here's a potential split of that team. Like, oh no, Natalie doesn't have backup. What do we have to do to be able to let her off for a week? Well, we got to hire somebody else as a web developer. And we made that part of our system. And over, you know, 6 months or so, we built that. We hired the people. And now my team does sabbaticals. And we're never more than 8 weeks from a week paid vacation.
And I mean, I would imagine they come out of that like, you know, a bat out of hell, getting, you know, kicking butt again because their batteries recharge. They you know, have so much appreciation. They're not going to jump ship because someone offers them 3% more salary.
I hope not. I think that is something that is really cool that we were able to do here. And it's not easy. It's certainly not easy. I mean, I don't know that I actually take the time off. Like, you know, I'm still sometimes stuck like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work, you know, but it's nice to see my team refreshed, to take a full week off and take the stress off and come back kind of refreshed to go forward. So yeah, it's a part of our culture now. And it's a, you know, it's a weird word, culture, but, you know, who we are is who we want to be. And that's, you know, we've developed that ourselves.
Right on. Well, Lynn, I'm fired up. I'm inspired by your story. And, you know, in particular, I think the vulnerability to articulate the shortcomings or the kind of missteps that came along the way is a really important part of helping other people to ascend. And so I really admire that about you and your willingness to kind of share the reflections on what you were leaving. You referenced leaving a legacy. Like, that's a really powerful image to pierce someone's mind. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for coming on the podcast. Before we ask our standard last questions, is there anything else you were hoping to share today that I didn't give you a chance to?
I don't think so. I really appreciate the conversation. This is the kind of conversations that I love to have. I think there is a, I think there's a lot of room in our industry for authenticity. I hope that that's what I bring when I talk to people. I hope that, you know, you can see that what you see is what you get, and I probably overshare. And I think there's room for that. I think there's room for the real conversations. I think there's room for talking about the actual challenges and difficulties we face instead of just talking about how much money we're making and what's our MMR and those sort of things. I like the real conversations quite a bit more than those.
And I mean, I think it's highly driven. I've only in the time that I've known you, it's highly driven by wanting to help other people avoid a potential misstep and a very kind of real, you know, desire to help. So, you know, if someone's, you know, on the fence about EOS, you gave the tagline there just kind of offhand in the middle about tripling revenue, 7x-ing profit. And I remember forget what the other, doubled your team size. And it's like, you know, a lot of people would take that and could probably, you know, have you help them implement EOS if that's, you know, something that they haven't done yet. So if people want to learn more about you, about your company, what digital coordinates can we provide people?
Oh gosh, I'm really easy to find. I'm probably the only Lynn Askin on the planet. So a quick Google search lands you probably on my LinkedIn page, or you can email me, lynn@rackstar.com. You can find me on EOS Worldwide, / Lynn-Askin. But LinkedIn, Facebook, any of those, I'm available and flexible for however you'd like to reach out.
How good is that, having such a distinct name for SEO?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's kind of fun. I think I haven't really thought through what, you know, the challenges would be if my name was different, but it's I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah, I unfortunately have a country music star also by the name Verin Watson. That's a considerably nice. Larger search volume than me. So a little jealous.
Follow him on TikTok, I think.
A little jealous of the distinct name. Awesome. We're going to link that all in the show notes. People can find it at goingdeepwithaaron.com/podcast for every single episode of the show. Or in the app, we're probably listening to this right now. But before I let you go, Lynn, I'd like to give you the mic one final time to issue an actionable personal challenge to the audience.
I think this is going to be around core values. I think the core values have been such a big part of our company that I'd like for you to go and examine yours. Is it just a poster? Do you live it? Do you mean it? Do you hire with it? Do you fire with it? Do you praise with it? Do you use them as guiding principles in your company that help you grow? Can you use your core values to attract more of the clients that you want? And even better than that, repel clients that you don't. My challenge to you is to sit down with you and your leadership team and really define your core values. These are just your 4 or 5 guiding principles about who you are, who you help, and how you operate. Define your core values and then live them. Like I said, you know, we use something called the Karma app or the Karma bot in Slack. And when we praise our team, we praise them on living our core values. You know, we'll say, kudos to Ozma for delivering excellence, which is one of ours. And then I'll say what she did this week. And so they're not just a poster here. We don't print them out and stick them on the wall. We live them. We talk about them. We have them followed by all and shared by all from top to bottom of the company. So I'm going to challenge you to do the same thing. Look at your core values. Ask yourself who you want to be. You know, what beliefs do you hold that can help you grow, that can help you reach your potential? So, in this sort of rapidly changing world, you know, sometimes it's hard to change and adapt to these new opportunities and remain like flexible and agile while still, you know, not compromising our core values. So that's my challenge to you. Define your core values and live them.
I love it. And one of the things that I've only very recently started to learn, I'm probably still in the process of learning it, if I'm being honest, is that, you know, when the values are so thoroughly integrated, as you've articulated, when they're so thoroughly integrated, it's actually helping you make decisions. And everyone talks about like decision fatigue. And they think that if I just wear like a turtleneck or, you know, a t-shirt like Zuckerberg, like that's what's going to save all my decision fatigue. And the reality is that most of the time, like that's not where we're burning our decision fuel. Maybe for some folks, but like for me, like this sweater was thrown on, right? Like that's not really the core issue, but things like who to hire, whether or not to fire someone, you know, which clients to work with, those are big thoughts. Like that is burning your calories in your brain. And what's, you know, even in talking with you, Lynn, what's clicking for me is it's like, it's much easier to make those decisions and it's much easier to trust other people within your organization to make those decisions for you or with you or as a part of the team's efforts, because the values are clear and aligned and you're allowing your company to scale via those, you know, specific distinct points of what your company prioritizes.
Yeah. Having your core values shared from the top to the bottom of your organization is just one of the keys to success. It's funny you mentioned really quickly, decision fatigue. And that's something that I think all of us have probably faced. And I've done the same thing. I got a stack of these gray t-shirts that I just grab in the morning and throw on because I don't want to think about that sort of thing. Probably the best thing that I ever did for my own decision fatigue is I hired an executive assistant to check my email. And so that's a great tip for you guys. If you can manage that, the decisions that I had to make every morning and every night, looking at 150, 250 emails, you know, do I have to do something with this? Do I delete it? Do I defer it? Is it spam? Do I delegate this to somebody? Is this actionable? Every email that I looked at was two or three or four decisions. And, you know, by the end of the day, I was worn out. So that was one of the best things I've ever done is hire an executive assistant to handle email. And now I just get two or three Slack messages a day for the important things that I have to handle.
When did you hire the EA?
About 2 years ago.
Awesome. Any quick tips there? I know I said that was the last question, but that's like, you left some meat on the bone there, Lynn.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Well, the things that I did, you know, I created a list of acceptable responses. I created a list of important people. You know, here's my lawyer, here's my attorney, here's my CPA, here's my accountant, here's my bank, here's my, you know, here's emails from, here's all of our clients. You know, if those emails come in, I have to see them. And then as we, you know, examine things over the first 2, 3 weeks, month, you know, you just built a level of trust that, okay, these newsletters can be filed. You know, he doesn't have to see these, but these are things that are important. So he does a really good job of reading my email and determining, is this something that I need to see? And we err on the side of caution. You know, we don't want anything to go away that I should see. And so sometimes I look at things that I don't need, but every one of those is a learning experience too.
Interesting. Well, Lynn, this has been a learning experience for me. I'm really grateful that you came on the show, shared your story with us. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks so much. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate you.
We just went deep with Lynn Askin. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day.
Hey, thanks for listening to the end of my interview with Lynn. If you enjoyed it, you'd also enjoy our recent interview with Jordan Ross of 8-Figure Agency. He's a master of operations, has taken a lot from Amazon, is also really focused on the mindset that is required to hit the next level of success. Go check it out.